Welcome to the Revenue Lounge, a podcast for revenue operations professionals who want to understand the various facets of this important go-to-market function. In each episode, the team at Nectar interviews revenue warriors on how they are reimagining revenue operations in creative and disruptive ways, and what are their secrets to building a scalable and predictable revenue engine. Let's get started.
Account-based marketing is one of the most misunderstood strategies in modern B2B. Many companies claim to be doing ABM, but in reality, it's the same demand generation tactics and playbooks, just with a targeted set of accounts with the goal of developing more pipeline. ABM isn't a campaign or extension of existing playbooks. It's an organizational shift that aligns marketing, sales, and customer success to a cohesive go-to-market motion. Done right is a clear business strategy sponsored by the executive team that involves shared metrics tied to the fundamentals of revenue. It's a blueprint for how leadership, sales, marketing, revenue, enablement, customer success, and product work together to hit the numbers needed for a company to get to the next level. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Revenue Lounge. I am your host, Randy Likas, and joining me today is Christina Jaramillo, president of Personal ABM. Christina is a thought leader and expert on account-based marketing. She enabled the go-to-market teams at supply chain tech, sales and marketing tech, IT service management tech, and other SaaS firms to design and execute strategic ABM programs that drive maximum revenue growth. Christina, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Randy. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
I am as well. I've been a big fan of both you and Eric since I've gotten to know you over the past few months. And so really excited to have you as a guest and share your insights and expertise with our audience. So what I'd like to do usually to kick off these podcasts is just start with a question about you. So maybe you can walk us through your background, your role at Personal ABM, and what does Personal ABM do for your clients and how you differ from some of the other ABM consulting firms when it comes to ABM strategy and execution?
Sure. So as you said, I'm president of Personal ABM. We're essentially an account-based go-to-market firm. We're focused on helping marketing, sales, and customer success teams land and expand their most valuable accounts. And we do this by changing interactions that all teams are having across the buyer's journey and the customer lifecycle and the account experience they deliver, because we feel like every touch point is like a mini sales conversation. And we think that the experience that a marketing delivers is going to impact sales, and then the same thing for sales impacting customer success. So everyone's involved. And as a result, we've helped a lot of go-to-market teams reverse no positions with enterprises like UPS. We've improved enterprise win rates by over 200%, increased deal sizes by 2 to 3x, and we've protected at-risk accounts like Procter & Gamble, and we've gotten accounts get more profitability from existing customers like Sephora. So we approach ABM differently as a firm. So I kind of put ABM into five buckets. You have those ABM firms that kind of bolt on ABM, they kind of add it on to the many dozens of things that they do just to follow that ABM bandwagon, but they're not really truly understanding ABM.
Yeah.
Doing targeted marketing, maybe targeted demand gen. Then you have the firms that manage the ABM tech. So they're going to implement and take care of like Sixth Sense, Demandbase, Terminus, things like that. So they handle the tech, but they're not changing that go-to-market, not changing the messaging or the content. They're an extension of the team, and they give you the tech capability, but they're basically order takers.
Yeah.
Then you have the account-based demand gen agencies, and it plays a role in account-based go-to-market, but I think of ABM and demand gen as two different things. Demand gen feeds into ABM. Then these firms are focused on putting accounts into the pipeline versus how are we going to take accounts from engagement to revenue. Mm-hmm. And then you have those firms that are true ABM firms, but do little beyond static playbooks to enable sales and customer success. Then you have account-based go-to-market, which is what we do at Personal ABM. And again, we focus on the right accounts into the pipeline, then enabling all of the teams across the customer touch points to move account forward with customer account insights, with content for the conversations, for those internal conversations as in, well as in person. Then we have account-specific buyer enablement that we do, account-specific messaging and content. And our KPIs, we focus on stage progression, improving win rates, accelerating deal sizes, it's accelerating deals in general, and increasing long-term revenue growth. So if someone wants to go to our site, you're going to see like a video under the resources about agency, the ABM agency landscape in greater detail, just to give you an insight, because it can be very confusing if you're looking for someone with outside help.
So, Christina, if you look at all of the different companies who are hiring, almost always you're seeing an ABM position. You hear so many people talking about ABM. So a lot of companies, it appears to be, are investing heavily in their ABM program. Yet when we talk with marketing leaders and people who are responsible for the ABM programs of their company, they just feel like they're not getting enough out of it, right? It's not driving revenue. Why do you think that is? And how can companies evolve their programs to make sure that ABM truly rings that revenue bell?
I think the first thing people have to do is consider that ABM should change how you think about your business. So it should change how you package solutions, how your teams are even structured, change the content and messaging, and how the go-to-market teams are going to engage with buyers across the target organizations. And it really should change how you differentiate your solutions from competitors. And in particular, because this is something that happens a lot, with how are you going to compete against status quo, because a lot of indecision is happening.
Yep.
So ABM really needs to change the interaction the teams are having. Again, the account experiences that we deliver as a team. I think many teams skip to defining their ABM goals, maybe identifying their ICP, and it's usually broad, figure yep. out account prioritization. Then they outline some activities and campaigns and cadences. But a lot of that is like tactics.
Yeah.
And they're retrofitting ABM on top of what they're already doing, on top of existing processes. So really what a go-to-market team essentially winds up doing is better targeted marketing, targeted demand gen. And this is happening across organizations, and it's even with senior marketers. Like I just talked to a few weeks ago, a head of marketing for an accounts payable automation, so an FP&A tech firm. And they came to us, they wanted to fix their ABM program. They had started it about 8 months ago. They needed to really recalibrate their frameworks, their processes, their metrics, their strategic view of how they were going to go to market, because they were having an issue with sales not making any headway into their named accounts. And they weren't seeing returns on their time and investments in ABM. So we noticed that they had automatically focused their ABM program on new logo acquisition versus what we think ABM should be, is where do we need to fix the revenue gaps? Where is the biggest challenge that we're seeing? They also define their ICP as global operating organizations that process more than 50,000 invoices and then have multiple formats, which is humongous.
Yeah.
They didn't segment their existing customers to feel like, you know, let's take a step back. Let's look at the accounts that have the greatest revenue or long-term revenue growth, are getting the most value out of our platform. They didn't look at the characteristics of those existing customers, and they were just really sticking with or looking only at the characteristics of like the demographics, the technographics to define their ICP. And so they didn't go beyond that ICP to identify the winnable, accessible market and the accounts that match their tier one ICP, where they have relevant stories and where they can come to the conversation with a point of view. They really needed sales to have a little bit more focus, so they weren't really wasting their time. Because they were so broad, that's why sales was not getting the traction they wanted, but they were also annoyed with the ABM program.
Yeah.
And they also were not segmenting their customers where they could drive expansion beyond maybe selling one product or one capability, so they could drive the greatest revenue streams year over year. And they were missing out on opportunities to uncover the next valuable customer that could be even more profitable for them. And they were missing opportunities to identify churned accounts that were lost due to that account experience that they delivered. It wasn't very cohesive. So that was one of the issues. And they weren't taking time to understand their customers, you know, that they failed to capture those stories that can be used to win similar accounts. You know, what was the stat? What were they doing beforehand? What did we help them with? How are they doing now? Where are their areas for growth? A lot of case studies, a lot of examples are just like, this is what we implemented. That's it. And these are some vague results. And it was also another key issue that a lot of other teams have. We noticed that was sales led. So the sales team was targeting these global enterprises, but there was no actual reason as to why. They weren't coming to each conversation with a point of view about that prospect's business, which was impossible if you don't really have a clear point of view about your business. And by not having that clear point of view, they were struggling to differentiate against big players like Coupa, S&P, and Burse, and show that the risks or the shortcomings in those platforms, how they wouldn't add risk around the target accounts, finance operations, and the organization as a whole. So it's something about how do we change our view of our business, and then how do we implement account-based go-to-market strategies to achieve those goals and to address the red in the business.
So I'm going to play back a couple of things that I heard, and I want to unpack it a little bit. So one is, were you using it as just a slap-on extension of a tactic, if you will, yeah, as opposed to a strategy, right? The second one is it's being led by or assigned to someone who is responsible for executing, but not necessarily aligned to the strategy, right? Yeah. It's not being viewed as a strategic change in the go-to-market motion. Again, kind of viewed more as a tactic. And then it's working of existing positioning, if you will, not changing the view in terms of how we can help these individual customers and their particular pain points, as opposed to just like a really, really broad group of the not technographics, but basically characteristics instead of focusing on problems. So did I get that sort of summarize that back correct?
Very good.
So for companies and people that are like in that situation and people who are responsible for ABM programs, what recommendations might you make? Or maybe when you're going in and you're doing an assessment and understanding that, how do you go about solving some of those things like alignment issues? Or look, you've got to think about this as more than a tactic, it's more strategic. How do you approach that? And what recommendations might you make for others who maybe feel that, but they're not sure how they can influence or change that?
Yeah. So the biggest thing I say to people when we talk to these companies is that this has to be a leadership shift, and it has to be marketing, sales, and if you have customer success involved, that's even better. And it can't just be that, you know, marketing will take the lead, or sales will take the lead, or sales will pick accounts, or marketing will pick them. It has to be, this is how we're going to handle these accounts as a team, and how we're going to get them from engagement all the way through to close, and eventually they'll be a customer, and then how we can expand them later on. But I think once you've gotten that alignment, once everyone's on the same page, is how are we going to get accounts to revenue? That's the bottom line.
Yep.
Where is the biggest problem in our revenue function? Are we having issues going up market? Are we having issues with churn? So maybe we're putting the wrong accounts into pipeline, so they're only staying a year or two instead of long-term and growing. Are we losing to competitors because they're seen as a safe bet?
Yep.
So once we figure out where the biggest revenue leak is, then we can figure out where we can put ABM and address that fit. So how do we address those issues? And then we can use the account-based strategy to address those issues. Because I think too many people think of ABM either as a silver bullet when it's a tech platform, maybe based, or ABM, we're going to do ABM for net new and just do it targeted demand gen, or we're going to do it for a customer play. But why are we doing that?
Yeah.
What are we trying to fix? And I think when you take on too much, that's why ABM programs and strategies and implementations always get, or not always, but a lot of times they stop going. The program just stops because, oh, we're not getting results in 30 or 60 days. Yeah. For a true program to work, you need 3 to 6 months to see anything. And that, in order to figure out if you're doing it correctly or if you're getting any results, you have to see, are we increasing these deal sizes? Are we winning against competitors that we typically lost against? Are we expanding deals? Are we shortening sales cycles? Are we impacting revenue? It doesn't have to actually be maybe, are we closing more deals? It's how are we impacting that revenue? And I think people don't give it enough time to realize that it's not a quick fix. This is a long-term strategy growth. And yeah, anything that's going to be a strategy shift is going to need time, and it's going to take time. And your program is always going to evolve. It's not like, oh, we developed it 6 years ago and it's going to stay the same.
Yeah. I think what you're getting at is, has a lot of parallels to what we see often, which is go-to-market functions are still operating in silos.
Oh, yeah.
Marketing is responsible for demand gen and passing over leads. And they go, well, we hit our MQL goals this quarter, but we missed on revenue. And that's just completely wrong, right? I think the most progressive organizations are moving to look at how do we break those silos down,
yep,
align ourselves on metrics that are measured across. So who cares whether or not we develop the leads if we didn't hit our pipeline numbers, right?
Exactly.
And so there's a lot of parallels, I think, just between, I think what I'm hearing you say is we can't have, to do effective strategic ABM, we can't operate in silos any longer, right? So I'm curious if we just talk about some of the ultimate metrics or measurement that ABM programs should align around. You mentioned this, I think, at the top of the call, it's a couple of different things, but when you think about designing a strategic ABM program, what are some of those shared metrics? And then the second part of that question would be, what are the KPIs or leading indicators that your ABM program is actually tracking to those metrics?
Yeah, that's good. I think we have to all be on the same page. So marketing, like you said, cannot be talking about MQAs and MQLs, because I've never heard a salesperson or a sales leader that gave whatever about it. Yeah. So revenue, yes, is the ultimate metric, but it's not ARR growth that you should be looking at, but the NRR growth. So ABM's not about the next deal. It's about driving the greatest revenue streams possible year over year. But to get to that greater NRR, we need to first impact, like we were talking about earlier, stage progression, win rates, deal sizes, churn rates. You need to look at the red in the business, how do we plug it up, and then put metrics in place around those issues. So, for example, if a team is struggling to get higher value deals, then we got to look at the engagement across the organization. See if the teams are focused on departmental pains and pain points. And what we usually see is that's what they're talking about. They're talking about it at the tactical level, at maybe the person that's using it versus the entire business, how their solution impacts beyond the user and how it impacts the overall business. And we can see and change the conversation to how can we embed our solution across the organization. We should also look at, are we getting engagement with those VPs or the C-suites, or are we being redirected down to those personas a couple layers down, like I said, the users of your solution. So we need to change that content, change that messaging and interactions to engage these C-suites, these VPs, and measure that area then. So it's about putting KPIs in place to track your progress and fixing the areas that are impacting your ability to drive stronger revenue. And the quicker and more involved marketing can become as a standalone in revenue metrics, the easier it will be to get sales on board. Because if you're not speaking revenue numbers to a salesperson, then you might as well be speaking another language, because that's, at the end of the day, how are you going to help me close more deals? How are we going to do it faster? How am I going to make more money? No deals, no clients, then marketing's out of a job too. So I'm not sure why we're not accountable for just for revenue. Maybe not at the same level as sales, but we definitely have to have that as our key goal.
Yeah. So one other follow-up question. In your experience, at what level should an ABM program leader sit? I think what we see sometimes is, it's, again, if it's seen as a tactic, it's like put maybe a senior manager or director to run the program, and they can't necessarily influence those cross-functional leaders. And so it's got to have the sponsorship of at the least probably a CMO, but it's got to have the sponsorship of other leaders. I'm curious, in an ideal world where you've seen it work most successfully, who owns it, who leads it, and who's responsible for driving that cross-functional collaboration?
So I think this senior sales leader, whether that's a CRO, chief sales officer, whatever, and marketing leader, CMO, need to be in lockstep of how we're going to, or what accounts we're selecting, why we're selecting them, where do we fit, what are their strategic priorities that our solution can play a part in them achieving. But the ultimate person that maybe like oversees that everyone's doing their job, ideally to me, would be product marketing. Because the product marketer is the closest bridge between sales and marketing. So they do the enablement, but the enablement in a way that they talk about the solution, not as a features benefits type of thing, but how does this solution fit into your organization to help you do XYZ better, help you achieve your strategic vision. So if an organization says that we're focused on expanding into this market in the next 6 to 18 months, well, how can our solution help them achieve that goal? That's a way different story than saying, oh, we can sell into the marketing managers because we're selling a marketing tech. But if we can influence the C-suite and help them achieve their goals, and you make your solution stickier if you're impacting more than that one department, and it'll help you stay longer, the customer stay longer, and eventually, ideally, expand with you. So yeah. I think the product marketer is like the quarterback type of thing. Mm-hmm. And then the chief salesperson and the CMO are like the coach or GM.
Yeah. Do you see often like a revenue committee that comes together and we have a monthly meeting where we look at our KPIs that we've established? And is that a common practice that you see, or is that the best practice that isn't happening that you should think should be?
I don't see it as often as I would like. I think RevOps really needs to be in on this. And if it's not product marketing that kind of is the quarterback, it definitely should be RevOps, because they speak sales as revenue language.
Yeah.
They can see they have the data and the insights to see what's working and what's not. And they can get back to you and say, well, we need to tweak this somehow because this isn't helping us achieve what we set out to achieve. And it's not achieving our goal. How do we shift this? And they can give you like those warning signs.
Yep.
But definitely have to be involved. If you have a revenue operations person or a leader, you definitely need to include them, because they do have those insights that a marketing person wouldn't have and necessarily a salesperson wouldn't have. So
yeah,
definitely get them involved.
They can also connect those dots between platforms.
Yeah.
Because, you know, too many times we've got our ABM platform, we've got our marketing automation system, we've got CRM, we've got sales engagement, and they're all siloing data around, and that RevOps person is the person that can help design it cohesively. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're like the revenue brain.
Yeah. So moving on, I love what you have been doing over the past several weeks, couple months around LinkedIn. You provide a lot of great thought leadership on LinkedIn. It's been very refreshing. And one of the things I know that you're really passionate about is this over-reliance or promise of intent data is going to solve all of our needs, right? And it's almost like this oversell that, well, we bought this ABM platform and that's our ABM strategy. And so you also talk about the challenges that intent data itself has, right? It's speculative versus predictive. Can you talk us a little bit more about kind of your thoughts in this area?
Yeah, this is something that I've been talking about for a long time. And then, of course, people think that I'm like attacking particular platforms. And it's just because that they're one of the more well-known ones. And it's not because I don't think they're a great solution. It's because they say that they are predictive. I guess their definition of predictive is different than mine. To me, intent is not predictive. It only reflects the current state or mindset of the person or the potential buyer. It looks at maybe what they're looking at, what they're considering, but you don't really know what's going on in that person's head. It doesn't necessarily guarantee their future actions, their buying behaviors, which to me what the word predictive means, but side note. So it doesn't consider if that company is even against outsourcing, if the account aligns with you operationally, executionally, philosophically, culturally. Are you guys like all on the same page? You can't read into that. Yeah. It captures current activity. It tracks online behavior, so like website visits, keyword searches, downloads, which shows that a person is actively looking and researching at the moment. But are they looking to learn? Are they looking just because they're curious? Like, why? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't show what buyers are most likely do in the future. So as I said, it's not predictive, and it doesn't show if that account's going to either grow with you versus churn. So just because we close them, is that going to be a temporary win or is it going to be a long-term win? So what we need to do is use the intent as a springboard, add insights on top of that intent that shows accounts that are most likely to be part of your ICP, that are aligned with you, they're strategically ready, you know, the proxies that are in Sixth Sense and in Demand Base and all these intent platforms are not definitions of a true ICP. These added signals really show you if an account matches a business problem profile. And then again, those account insights to understand the company's situation, if they have a strategic priority in place that you can play that role in to help them achieve it, which is the best kind of account. And we need to tell the account story. So that deeper level research is needed in order to tell their story. When it comes to an ABM platform equaling ABM strategy, it's not the same thing. It's better targeting, pushing out content through it, and messaging is basically pushing out the same thing you've already gotten, just at a different scale and be a little bit targeted. So maybe you'll have better results, but maybe it's not a word that many marketers and salespeople like.
Yeah.
So you can't necessarily convert to revenue. So ABM tech has its purpose and it's fit for a particular purpose, but it's not an ABM program.
Yeah.
We need the right strategy again, and the right interactions and account experiences. And then we can find the right tech mix, because not everybody needs it. I've talked to people the last couple of months, a few senior marketers that have inherited a $200,000 contract with Sixth Sense for the next 2 years. and they're not getting any ROI out of it, and they wish they could free up that money, especially when budgets are getting cut. There's way better uses for that money, but unfortunately, these platforms have done such a wonderful job of marketing themselves that people have bought into that.
Yeah.
And it's not the platform's fault. It's just that the person that's using it isn't using it to its fullest potential.
Yeah, I think the way that I've read your posts is you're not saying anything inherently bad about these programs. I think what you're trying to do is change the narrative to say ABM tech platform does not equal ABM strategy. It may be a very important part in terms of how you execute that strategy, but you're trying to change the narrative a little bit to say there's more to the ABM strategy than just the intent platform.
Absolutely. And I think too many people, they bought something that they didn't necessarily need.
Yeah.
Or more importantly, they weren't ready for it yet. Like they could use it, but maybe in a year or two because they didn't have anything to fill it with. So then they blame the platform when the platform isn't to blame. It's the fact that you were just too soon.
Yeah.
And ready.
I bet. So that's probably why, if you go back to my first question, which is so many people are feeling like they're not getting enough out of it, it's because they don't have that strategy set up first. They just thought, if I buy this and implement it, it's going to solve our problems. And that's why we're coming back 6 months later saying, we're not getting enough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So how should ABM strategies change when talking to or when targeting and thinking about developing programs around enterprise accounts versus mid-market versus SMB? A lot of people talk about one-to-one, one-to-few, one-to-many. That may or may not necessarily map to enterprise, mid-market, SMB. What your thoughts are around that?
All right. So I think the best way to explain this is probably to tell a story, only because it makes more sense when you think of it this way. I was talking to a sales leader with a construction camera service company. So it's very niched. They provide time lapse, so live viewing, security monitoring, real-time project visibility. More than 70% of their customer relationships were at transactional level. So they were trying to change that sales-driven motion and changing the sales structure because the sales team was a mid-market sales team and they were trying to move to that enterprise. But they needed to change how the sales process were, how sales was even compensated. But what they were really having an issue is they were challenged to upskill their enterprise team so they could increase deal sizes. So their goal was to increase it by 2 to 4x. So their current ACV, from their current ACV, which was 250 a year, the reason that it was sales driven, what needs to be marketing and sales driven, it has to really start with marketing first. So we have to tell a different story. When you're targeting the enterprise, that ICP needs to be redefined. Your buyer personas needs to be expanded. Enterprise use cases need to align with enterprise strategic priorities. It's a different conversation. Mm-hmm. So marketing needs to help and start that conversation. Sales can't do it alone, especially when they're not used to it. So they need that kind of guidance in order to speed up that learning curve. So the content needs to be designed for specific enterprise sales conversations because those conversations are going to be extremely different. And sales teams need enterprise reframes. And they need to create these aha moments. So like, you know, oh, I didn't see it that way. I wasn't thinking about it that way. And then the enterprise business case and enterprise story. So you make that connection, because if you're trying to sell to an enterprise, but you're telling the story of a mid-market, they may see it as valuable, but they may not see it as something that needs to be, that we need to have now.
Yeah.
You know, maybe next quarter we'll look at it. Maybe we'll look at it in a year. So taking a strategic account-based enterprise sales approach really requires completely different go-to-market. So you need that new marketing, new sales, customer success experience to deliver your account experience. I know I've said this ad nauseum. Account experiences across the buyer's journey, they need to change. And it's going to lead to that greater ARR, GRR, and NRR growth that the senior leaders are looking for. But demand gen needs to bring in the right enterprise accounts and then the right reframes for sales to have those right conversations. And sales and marketing need to be able to work together, not only influence those key decision makers that engage, but influence, more importantly, I think, is the internal conversations that are happening once they figure out, okay, how do we know that we want to go with this organization? So we need to be able to enable our champions internally with the right content and messaging so that they can go to bat for us and be well-armed. You need to bring different enterprise departments and functions together and create that consensus in your direction. And again, we're going back to that right account experience requires sales, marketing, customer success, to work as a team together as one. So how are we going to win as a team together? How are we going to protect at-risk accounts from churning? And how are we going to expand these accounts that we know have great revenue expansion potential? So it's more about moving from the transactional pain point selling to solution selling.
As I was preparing for our conversation, I'd listened to a few other podcasts you had done. And what I love is there's a really practical story that has a lot of really good examples of the things you've talked about before around a freight and analytics company that y'all helped. And was wondering if maybe you could share a little bit more about like the challenges that they had, how they were, the messaging and targeting that they were using that wasn't working, and what advice you gave them to change that message. Would you mind sharing that with our audience?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's one of my favorite stories because when they came to us, they're like, oh, we were going to buy demand base because we think we need it for our ABM program. And we're like, well, take a step back. You might need it. You may not need it. You're probably not even ready for it. I can tell you that. So we took a look at what was going on with them, and we realized that they were trying to expand their footprint in an organization, get bigger deal sizes, not necessarily go up market, just increase deal sizes. And they were focusing their content on the user of their platform. So they were focusing it to target the transportation manager, and that's who was using it. That's who the platform was meant for. But there were other organizations and their competitors were offering lower freight analytics prices that were good enough for the transportation manager so they could get by. So like one of their biggest competitors was E2 Open. They offered freight analytics as free, so part of their suite. So how do they compete against good enough? How do they compete against something that's free? They weren't showing these how their freight analytics should really be integrated with demand forecasting to help the decision makers reallocate product in a timely fashion. They weren't showing how the freight analytics at the component level, which other platforms did not provide. So that was a big differentiator. So that could play a role in inventory management. They weren't showing how to play a role in sales and marketing promotions. So as you can see, how are we playing a role in more and more departments as opposed to just a transportation manager? So they weren't showing how, when they were applying to sales and marketing promotion, so how should we discount? Should we discount? Is freight pricing going to put too much pressure on margins? And because marketing at the time didn't have the right content, sales was having the wrong conversations. So when they approached a VP of supply chain or a chief supply chain officer, they weren't speaking their language. They weren't speaking what mattered to them. They were automatically redirected back to the transportation manager, which is a couple of layers down. So they were basically back to where they started.
Yep.
When they did get that win with the sales transportation manager, the customer success teams would continue that sales conversation because that wasn't changed, versus getting the accounts to evolve with the platform, getting them to use the platform in different ways. So the CFO, when it came time to address spending, they would see that platform as a nice to have. Maybe they were using it a couple of times a year versus making it part of their like daily or monthly routine.
Yeah.
You know, and they would automatically question why they were using this more expensive platform. Why aren't we using a cheaper one? Why aren't we using a free one that has good enough analytics? So a lot of their accounts would churn. By changing the account experience we delivered across the buyer's journey and customer lifecycle, we were able to help DAT land and expand accounts that were on Gartner's top 25 supply chain list. So that what we really did was go back and see what these are some of the accounts that look like some of their customers. We know that they are going to be, they would be a great fit, but how do we speak to them as a organization, not as a role, not as a department? How can we make ourselves more embedded? And that changed the conversation right away.
Yep.
For marketing, in turn for sales, in turn for customer success. So it became of, we're not a nice to have anymore, we're a must have, and this is why.
So I love that story. I think it's great. And one of the things I just wanted to unpack a little bit is when you talk about how we saw that they were talking to the transportation managers, but they weren't getting the next level up, or when the deal was sold and it was being passed over to the CSM and the CSM was having the same conversations. How did you discover that? Was that from legacy data that they had across all their past opportunities? Was it interviews with the sales reps? It was very important insight, I think, but I'm curious how you got to that insight.
Yeah, absolutely. We looked at their win-loss analysis. We looked at the customers that were churning. We looked at who they were individually. Like if we could tell who they were losing to by name, we would say, okay, what is it they're offering? And that's how we found that E2 Open had something free. And some of them were cheaper. A lot of their competition was cheaper because they didn't offer the same solution. And we also looked at their content that they were sharing on there. It, again, spoke to this role as a spoke instead of speaking to a business leader. Like, you're going to need that that content for that particular person because they're most likely an influencer versus a decision maker. But if you're only speaking to them, then automatically, if I come over and I'm a chief supply chain officer, I'm like, you're not speaking to me. I don't need this. Or my team doesn't need this. So it was mostly the content with the win-loss analysis. And I think also just having somebody look at your content and your approach from an outside in.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you just can't see that. And we also noticed they weren't talking about some of the best features that they offered that made them different. Some of the best features that justified their price point and even more, because they would get, the customer would get ROI on them. So it was more of looking at it from another lens and making sure that you're speaking for differentiation, especially when you're a smaller company competing against these legacy platforms.
Yeah.
Like, why would I choose not to go with a legacy that's offering me free stuff that's good enough? If you can tell me that if I switch to this and spend a little bit more money, I can save 10 times that in the first year, then it's a no-brainer. But if you're not pointing out why you're different, then you just become another freight and analytics company that's smaller than everyone else.
Yeah, and to your point, if you're a small company that people don't necessarily hear of, like, what's the old saying? Like, nobody ever got fired for hiring IBM, right?
Correct.
Because they were the safe bet.
Yeah.
But if you can get them to think a little bit differently about the business or reframe the narrative and be seen as somebody who's actually knows my business really well and has a point of view on business, that's how you
totally
get hired.
That's a totally different conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, last question for you before we head into what we call our lightning round, which is a little bit more on the personal side of things. What is one widely accepted ABM best practice that you think is outdated or ineffective that you would love to kill?
One of my favorite questions. Okay, so I really think we need to get rid of that ABM triangle or pyramid, whatever you want to call it. This was developed over 15 years ago. So teams kind of created that tiered ABM program that's, again, siloed, like we were talking about, versus an integrated account-based program where one is feeding into another. And in line with that, I think a lot of people need to stop thinking about one-to-one ABM for sourcing the pipeline. Done right, a one-to-one is not scalable. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of resources, money investment, people, to do one-to-one ABM right. So the investment with these accounts has to be, because we know these accounts have the greatest probability of landing and expanding with the high ACV to us. If a one-to-one account does not land at least a 2x ACV, then they shouldn't have been a one-to-one. Mm-hmm. And we even told a EVP of marketing at a company with, I think their deal size was around the 100K ARR, and they was at the low end, and then they went up to 650 ARR for their deal sizes. We need to figure out one-to-one should really focus on moving those accounts to revenue. It's, again, about improving the experiences that sales and marketing and CS teams need to have at the bottom, middle to the bottom of the buyer's journey. And we noticed that this particular EVP followed that traditional ABM, you know, one-to-one, one-to-few, one-to-many. They were very siloed versus being integrated. When you take an account-based go-to-market approach, those ABM programs are streamlined, where you increase relevance. So from each touch point, you increase relevance a little bit more as they move further and further in their journey. Instead of being a triangle, an ABM model would, to me, better be depicted as like an ABM triangle, where something that we're working on internally and we'll be sharing soon, but it's how are we going to get them to engagement, to revenue, once they're revenue, how are we going to make sure they stay and even better, expand with us? And then we can replicate that while telling the next prospective client's story. So I think the triangle needs to go. And to me, ABM should be, let's say, like one to many is demand gen. And then whoever like comes trickled down through that journey goes to one to many. And then if someone goes a little more engagement, one to many, and then we see them, there's more engagement. We have a strategic priority, and they have a strategic priority in place that we can play. They have a business problem profile, all these things. And we know that they could be a lucrative deal for the long term as well. Then they go to one to one. So it's almost like a sieve, like lead demand gen is that one to many, and then they trickle down.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. Like, once we get that initial land, if they have the characteristics to either buy the products that are part of our platform, you know, there may be new buying committees involved. How do we develop the content that speak to those buying committees? How do we make sure that we're having conversations with folks who aren't the users or the admins of our tool, but broadening those conversations to speak to the broader value that the platform provides?
Very crucial.
Yeah. Great. Well, let's move on to the lightning round, because I want to be cognizant of time here, and we've got a few more minutes. So I would want to start with just one really simple question, which is, when you're not thinking about ABM and you're not helping clients think about ABM, what do you like to do in your spare time?
I don't know if it's like what I like to do or what I am doing. I think it's a combination. So I have two kids. One is 12 and one is 8, and they're both on a year-round swim team. So they're in the pool about 5 days a week, which means I am shuttling them back and forth. So if I am not shuttling them, then I am sitting on the bleachers at a very hot swimming pool arena and watching them swim. But they love it. So that's what we do. I never thought I'd be a swim family, because neither my or my husband had really any swimming background. But our kids are like fish. My son even made states last year, and he was super impressed with himself.
What's the event? Does he backstroke, freestyle?
Oh, I think it was freestyle, and he'd kill me if I didn't know that off the top of my head. I think it was a 50 free. I don't know. This kid swims like 500 frees, and I have to like stand there and put him. I don't know if you've ever seen kids do this, but they have a giant like stick with numbers on it, and you throw it in the water so they see how many laps they do. Because if he's doing a 25-lap pool for 400 or 500, whatever, it could be like 20 something laps, depending. So,
Yeah.
It's intense. Wow.
All right, next question. So, where do you turn to for inspiration?
For inspiration, definitely my kids. Whenever I have a bad day, that is something that I can look at and they help me get through them. But also, it's just my family as whole. Like, when I am ever thinking, why am I doing what I do? Why am I a business owner? Why am I having all these crazy hours, putting in so much work? And it's because what I want to provide for my family, what I want to provide for my kids. And I want to show my kids, not having a business or having a career isn't just about making money. It's about being happy with what you do and doing it for good reasons. And then knowing at the end of the day, why you're actually doing it.
Yeah. I love that. My kids are a little bit younger than yours. I've got a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old, but
so fun.
Yeah, it's a great age for both. But you know, when you're busy working, it's going upstairs and asking how their day was and just getting away from the badness of the work, that's my why as well.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't have said that maybe 15 years ago.
Okay, what's the best advice that you've gotten in your career that still sticks with you today?
So when I started my business, I had already been working for a nonprofit organization and I had been there for a couple of years. And when I was going to start my business, my mother was super scared because she's like, you won't have health insurance, you'll be doing this, it won't be constant and blah, blah, blah. And my dad said to me, he's like, the only way you're going to really be happy with what you do is if you run your own business. You found that, we've seen, you've proven that it's a viable option for you. This is the only way that you're going to be happy. You're going to have the flexibility to have a family. You're going to have the flexibility to do what you want when you want. And he had a career working corporate his entire life for different big banks and different companies. So he was like, I've always wanted to do this. Do it. You have my support. And it was the oddest thing, because I thought he would be the last person that would say that to me. Everybody else was like scared about the insurance thing was the big thing that everyone was worried. You have to pay your own insurance. I was like, I'll be fine. But he was the voice of reason when I would have thought that he would have been, oh, no, play it safe and stick to corporate. But no.
Yeah.
So that sticks with me, to go with your gut. And if he had the confidence, then I know I'm on the right path.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, what advice might you give to your younger self, right? Having the benefit of hindsight and experience, if you were to go back 10, 15 years, what advice might you give the younger Christina?
Start your own business sooner and read as much as you can and get a lot of people in your orbit, whether that's digitally or in person, that are smarter than you, that know what they're doing, that have more experience than you, that you can learn from and read from. Like, I live on LinkedIn, and most of the time it's because I'm not only researching for clients and for myself, but it's because I'm reading. Like, I have a list of 50 different influencers that I read their content on a regular basis so that I can either comment on, know what's happening in the market, know what people are thinking, challenge them. They also give me ideas for my content. So it's just always keep learning.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that early in my career, and I kind of regret that, but I'm going to try to see if I can break the cycle with my kids. We'll see.
We will have to talk offline because I have a lot of folks that I also follow and love their content, but it is so hard to keep it organized.
I have it on a Google spreadsheet, and otherwise, and I have to date it when I last look. So I look like on a weekly basis, and I circulate because otherwise I would spend hours just reading.
Yeah. Okay, last question. What advice would you give someone maybe junior in their career as a marketer or they're just getting into ABM?
So definitely attend a lot of webinars, workshops, connect with a lot of people who are already doing it, who are doing it well. See if you can learn from what they're doing. Read. Also, I think more importantly is to connect and learn from different various viewpoints on ABM. Because there are people that say ABM is tech. There are people like myself that say it's the opposite. But you have to figure out what works for you and your organization and your role. My way might not work for you. If you're selling, my way typically is for people that are selling six-figure or close to six-figure to seven-figure deals. If you're selling a $25,000 solution, the way that I tell you to run ABM is not going to be as lucrative for you, as successful for you. So you need to get various viewpoints. That way you can come to your own conclusion what works for you.
Yeah.
And also it's more... I think in any subject, if you have various viewpoints, then you can come to your own collective decision. And I think that's the way you should run your life in general, but definitely for ABM.
Yeah. Great advice. Okay. I said last question, but I've got one more. If folks that are listening to this episode want to connect with you or reach out to you, what's the best way?
LinkedIn is good. I'm always there. Check out personalabm.com. We have a podcast as well, aside ABM Dumb Right, where we talk about ABM from different leaders that are doing it, what they've learned, what the challenges they're overcoming, how they're approaching it from all different kinds of fields. So check that out as well, because that's awesome, a great resource. And you'll find other people that you can follow from that as well. But definitely LinkedIn and personalabm.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I love the knowledge drop on everything that we've discussed. I think our listeners will as well. So that's a wrap for another episode of the Revenue Lounge. I hope everyone has a great weekend. And Christina, you have an interesting weekend as well.
Thank you, Randy.